To the Ether. Today is Friday, June 24th, 2022. Today on the Ether, the Bytes Digital Group Weekend Crypto News. Let's take a listen.
Howdy, everyone. Thank you guys so much for joining. I'm going to real quickly get a tweet out. Just as wait for people to come in.
Hey, Joseph, how are you, sir?
I'm doing just dandy. Just read that CoinDesk article. That just came out of nowhere. That was literally dropped at 3:12 today.
Yeah, how about Goldman Sachs? Apparently rumored to be buying out Celsius. I didn't see that coming. That's pretty wild.
Goldman Sachs buying Celsius is a major narrative change there. I honestly think they may have already been doing it. Because the reason why I think that is because there was that So Flipside did a on-chain analysis of like the transactional volume or the average transactional size for the past couple months. It basically doubled. It went from like 400 million or yeah, it was like, I think it was around there, and it just went up to like 900 mil the next month. And it was obscene. Like the average transactional volume just went up insanely. And so that's making me think that an institution has been consistently just buying assets on Celsius, or just buying or selling or doing something on that platform, something big with a lot of money.
Yeah, I'm curious. Like, I know Celsius has their own token. Maybe you can give me more insight into this. But they're a centralized platform. Is there like governance involved with Celsius? I mean, what does the Celsius token do? And if Goldman actually wants to acquire them, does that mean it's simply them just purchasing the Celsius token, or is that like a more of an equity deal where, they acquire like in a more traditional sense? And then, I'm just curious how the token plays into it, and I can look it up. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I don't know if you have any additional insight into that I might not have.
Yeah. So the token, as far as I know, has no true utility to the platform other than it qualifies you for certain tiers of like you get less fees or something like that. And you can also get higher, you can withdraw more money from the platform. I think they were at some point going to make it decentralized and it would be like governance control for the centralized exchange. But in reality, now at this point, it's just turned into kind of like a GameStop squeeze. Like short squeeze theory. With this news article, it actually might cause a giant short squeeze from this, because I can't imagine how many people were shorting Celsius's token into the dirt. I know FTX had an insane amount of shorts open on the Celsius token, or allegedly had a lot of shorts open. So this is actually kind of crazy. So there might be a major price action now that it looks like they might be getting acquired. This might just be bullish for Celsius token.
Yeah, and as far as I knew about Celsius, I think they were using basically the CEL token CEL to kind of just grease the wheels and help with, you know, deposits. For anybody listening that wasn't familiar with what happened with Celsius, they were essentially like a centralized version of, I don't know what's a good comparison in the Terra Luna world, since we're still lunatics at the end of the day. At like an aperture, basically. I don't know if I think that's a fair comparison, where you come in and, you know, Celsius has been around for a while too. So it started with basically just lending and borrowing. So you very, very basically, at a very basic level, you come in, you lend your asset, and then you earn a percentage off of that, or you borrow an asset and you pay a percentage of that. And then what they did is they kind of evolved into strategies and automation of those strategies, and they put basically their customers' assets into different vaults, and a couple of those vaults, one of which was UST, failed. And then another one was another big aspect of kind of like their whole basically ecosystem and how all the mechanics worked was ST ETH and people using staked ETH as collateral, which as that sort of depegged from regular ETH caused more liquidation. So they used the sell token to kind of grease the gears and help lubricate things whenever they potentially needed to add liquidity or sell to help the price out or sell in order for themselves not to get liquidated. This is also a huge argument for why people shouldn't use centralized services like Celsius. I don't have anything in particular against them, but not your keys, not your crypto. And it turned out that they were basically not only offering some of these vaults and some of these strategies to their users, but they were also using kind of their own treasury to profit from those same strategies. And whenever that went south, the sell token went south at the same time, and they weren't able to kind of put a huge sell order in and dump and make up whatever their losses were. So we saw, I think we were talking about this last week, was the big news. FTX was sending them very, very large amounts of USDC. And we were starting to wonder if maybe FTX was bailing them out or whatnot. But now, and this was CoinDesk, so I think that's a pretty reputable source to say that Goldman Sachs is considering buying them out, which is pretty crazy. I haven't seen a headline like that in a while. I mean, Celsius is, it's as far as Web3 and crypto people go, that's pretty much like a household name. And to see Goldman Sachs, which is a household name in TradFi, in the banking world, willing to come in and purchase a name with that much sticking power in Web3, it shows that there's definitely sort of a meshing of the old guard and the new guard there. So that's definitely bullish news, and it'll be interesting to see if this actually goes through or if this is just kind of a, some news fluff from whatever source.
Yeah, CoinDesk. Yeah, I mean, CoinDesk got this from someone. They don't name who their source is. They just say that it was someone who's two people familiar with the matter. And this is actually insane. It's legitimately $2 billion. I'll read out a little bit of the article for everyone. I actually try to find a tweet that'll say it, but Goldman Sachs is looking to raise $2 billion from investors to buy up distressed assets from troubled crypto lender Celsius, according to two familiar people. The proposed deal would allow investors to buy up Celsius's assets at potentially big discounts in the event of a bankruptcy filing. Goldman Sachs appears to be gauging interest and soliciting comments from Web3 crypto funds specializing in distressed assets and traditional finance institutions with ample cash on hand. That right there, that wording, gauging interest and soliciting comments from Web3 crypto funds specializing in distressed assets, that screams Alameda Research and FTX to me. Because they're known to be like people who will always try to acquire companies that are having these liquidity shortfalls. Alameda Research did it with Voyager. BlockFi recently was just acquired. I forget who acquired it. I think FTX. I'm pretty sure that those are the people that Goldman Sachs is in communications with, which can basically signal a major kind of union between the two companies almost. They're actually working together here. That's a lot of money to be flowing into the space. And I think it just reveals to you more that the institutions already know. Like, the institutions know what's going on. They know the innovation. They know the next generation of stuff that's going to come online over the next couple of years. And they wanted to get in early.
Yeah, it's an interesting play if you see someone like Goldman, or even really at this point, Alameda, FTX, acquiring assets from companies like Voyager, BlockFi, and Celsius. I talked about this last night. I just don't see the benefit of putting your assets in one of these centralized services. I mean, I think maybe convenience is it, but if you have any bit of ambition to actually own your money and You know, at the end of the day, for me, you know, the biggest innovation in crypto, and really like the native use case for crypto is Orange Coin. And I know I'm a boomer when I say this, and Joseph will make fun of me for having green hair, but the biggest innovation is the ability to retain your own value. And I know people always, you know, they'll shit on Bitcoin because they say, oh, it's down 50%. Store of value, store of value. How'd you store your value when your value is down 50%? But like, store of value means a lot more than just the price action. It means I can store value that I've accrued in a way that nobody can censor it. Nobody can touch it. Nobody can take it away from me. You know, as long as I remember my seed phrase, I can pretty much be thrown in jail or you know, sent to Guantanamo or have my, you know, legs and arms ripped off by a shark. But as long as I remember my seed phrase, at the end of the day, I can come back and just like reiterate my seed phrase to whichever wallet service and access my funds and prove to people that I have retained that value. And that's not something that's been able to be done before, even, you know, with consider any other way you can store value. Business investment, gold, cash, real estate, you know, obviously digital dollars in a bank. A lot of those things can be seized, or they're not as easy to, they have some sort of like physical liability, especially gold. Like for me to store gold is risky, and it's heavy and it's expensive to move around. And I think, you know, I'm explaining, I think, something that a lot of people kind of already understand, but what I'm getting at is the core of Bitcoin, and really a lot of cryptocurrencies have the same characteristics, but the core is that you can retain that value. You can store your value in an immutable way, in a censorship-free way, so that, you know, should you commit a crime, which the, you know, what the definition of crime, in my opinion, is going to expand, ever expand until, you know, everything's a crime and nothing is a crime at the same time. Or you say something that's, you know, like politically dissident, which is also an expanding definition. And that's really the power of crypto. And I was very excited to see that expand into different models, like with Aave and Compound and DeFi, like 1.0. And it was part of the reason why I think I was so bullish on Terra and things like Thorchain as well, because these are things that are permissionless. And, you know, with Thorchain specifically, you can do native swaps. You could swap assets that typically you would have to use a centralized exchange for that has kind of that immutability power. So I question why people get involved in things like Voyager or Celsius or BlockFi, even Coinbase to an extent. I personally don't use Coinbase for anything other than the on and off ramp. And I understand that that's a service. Like, we're always going to have to basically, you know, pick our poison with on and off ramps. But like, this just goes to show more and more that when you're dealing with the CDFi or the CFi, as some people call it, at the end of the day, you're kind of just dealing with TradFi. And so for Goldman to come in and be like, oh, you know, we're going to potentially purchase Celsius. It, to me, like, yeah, it's actually a big deal because it's a pretty big name to come in and like give a little bit of credibility to the Web3 space. But at the end of the day, it's really the same devil dressed in different clothing. And you know, not your coins, not your crypto. It's a trope. It's been said a lot, but it's something that I truly believe in. And again, I think to this day, the only true native sort of application that we've still to this day seen from blockchain, and people can argue this for sure, but is that self-custody, the ability to retain value in a way that no centralized entity can take it away from you, whether that's a government or a criminal or whatever. So, you know, it's definitely big news for sure. It's very interesting. I'm very intrigued to see it. But like, you know, Alameda, like at this point, Alameda and Goldman Sachs might as well be one and the same. So, all right, I'll stop. I'll get off my high horse here. I'll get off my soapbox.
No, you're totally fine, man. Anyone feel free to request to speak. This is more of a happy hour, and anyone can come up here and have just as long as monologues as Evan had. But yeah, no, I totally agree. I think for me, this is a huge, huge narrative painter for the next couple of years. I don't personally think that the conversation is going to end here. I think we're always going to see this kind of slow adoption from the big money, from Goldman Sachs, from all the other major banking companies, they're going to do moves like this, very similar to acquiring a Celsius, acquiring a Voyager. And it's because like the vast majority of people aren't on the fringe of understanding what a cryptocurrency or a blockchain can really do for a human. Like all those things that you mentioned, it's like those, like it's, there's genuine use cases, genuine actual application for immutability, storage of value. But the average person just doesn't care about that. And so the average person, well, I mean, I guess maybe they care about it without even realizing, but they don't genuinely find a way or I guess harness that concern into understanding what to do as better. And so that alternative option is to, oh, all these people are making money. They're buying these random tokens, I guess, and they're buying these NFTs. So I might as well just start doing it. Well, what's the easiest product that these people have access to? It is those centralized services. And so it's just kind of a way for them to stay relevant. But I think that the end game, the end way that this goes is that these kind of decentralized, these immutable services, they're going to be an unstoppable force due to the very nature of blockchain. It's going to be years from now until we can figure out a way to truly create almost a separation of the current like monolithic banking system and value system. So it's going to take a long time for blockchain to be able to mimic that kind of world, that kind of experience and seamless interaction. So I think we're going to be in this transitory piece where like the Goldmans, the Deutsches, the BlackRocks, they're going to start coming into this space. And there's not much we can really do about it just because of the vast amount of money. But the builders who made this tech are going to keep building the other way. There's just nothing they can really do to stop that. Unless they murder us all, like John McAfee.
Yeah, and by the way, John McAfee, I'm just going to go on the record and say he's not dead, number one. Number two, you use the word transitory, so be careful with that word. That's a controversial word nowadays. And number three, I think the scary thing will be, do we see these like sort of TradFi find sort of this like middle ground where they can acquire someone like Celsius? And then be like, oh, look, we're Web3, like we're using blockchain and all the powerful stuff. And like, you know, it's this sovereign currency, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, basically just like push through regulation to say, this is the only place that you can on and off ramp from. And if funds come from anywhere else, then we'll just blacklist it. Because a service like Celsius or like Coinbase, I mean, they can blacklist assets from anywhere. They're a private company. They have the right to do that. And whether that's them doing that or, you know, it comes down via regulation or, you know, some crime has been committed in some like, I guess, what's the word? Like some authority figure comes down and says like, hey, we need to pause this because there's an investigation going on. That's what's scary is, are we moving into a place where, you know, we're basically like Goldman Sachs is like, oh, we could just create a whole new market. And actually it's cheaper for us because we're basically just doing the same thing that we were doing anyway, but we've just offloaded like all of our servers to this network of people that, you know, think that they're freedom fighters, with, you know, whatever network we're on. And at the end of the day, it's going through, some centralized entity that can blacklist, you know, depositors or withdrawals or whatever. And so again, like I don't blame anyone who's like new to crypto. I can see it being very easy to like, you come in and I'll even admit, like when somebody asks me, when a normie comes up to me and they ask me about crypto, I give them that whole spiel that I kind of just gave about why I think Bitcoin has value. But then I will then when they're like, oh, okay, well, how can I get Bitcoin? And then I'm kind of like, well, honestly, like the easiest place to do it is through Coinbase. And so, you know, I'm guilty of the same thing where I'm like, okay, you know, do KYC through Coinbase. And then I say, but you should look into moving it off Coinbase at least. So I can see someone who doesn't know me, or doesn't know someone who has been around or kind of understands that value. It could be pretty easy to fall into like the, like, oh, I'm just going to trade crypto on Robinhood and just kind of like focus on price action. And this is really just another speculative asset. And they never really wrap their head around that native core use case of Bitcoin and why Bitcoin itself was so revolutionary, which is because it is this immutable currency, and even more so, which, you know, I think like when Satoshi created Bitcoin, he, she, they, you know, the Genesis block had like the headline of I can't remember exactly what it said, but it said like Chancellor on the brink of second set of bailouts for the banks. And that was a headline that was a fallout from the 2008 housing collapse. And what that, that what that was focusing on was this, like, you know, what do they call this, moral hazard, in which, like, our banking system, our traditional banking system, has gotten to a point where, like, okay, I guess they can just fuck up as bad as they want, and then taxpayers will bail them out. And that's one of the, it's a feature of crypto that, you know, we can have something like Luna and UST, and it can come along and people can buy into it. And when it collapses, like, there's really not a bailout. And as bad as it hurts, and as much, you know, people lose money on it, and I'm sure, like, there won't be, there might be people listening that aren't a fan of hearing this, but at the end of the day, we wiped out $43 billion or whatever in market cap between UST and between Luna. Moral hazard would have been, okay, well, hey, like, you know, TFL and Do Kwon or whoever you want to blame, like, totally screwed this up. So let's have Congress pass a bill and just hand us, you know, a check for $43 billion just to make everybody whole again. And you get to the point where it's like, okay, well now the money that Congress is printing, or you know, spending, whether that's through taxes or printing or whatever, now that's starting to become worthless. And now it's a hit on everybody, not just the people that are affected, not just $43 billion. I mean, $43 billion at this point for the U.S. is a drop in the bucket. And you know, one of the things, another thing that was interesting, we saw Jay Powell testify in front of Congress yesterday. And one of the big things that somebody brought up was, hey man, you know, we're raising interest rates. We're already at a national debt that annually is 125% of GDP. So that's already a ratio that can't be paid off. Not a pathway for the U.S. government to be able to pay their debts. Is it wise to raise interest rates to try to, you know, you're trying to stem inflation here, but, you know, what about the national debt? Like, what are we doing about that? Because what, you know, and nobody thinks it'll ever happen, but what if the U.S. like defaults? And, you know, Jay Powell, he said, he's like, no, you know, we're pretty certain that this is not an issue. But I do think the more and more we raise interest rates, the more and more that's going to become an issue. And that's going to be sort of like, okay, if we can curb inflation, that could be the next like crisis in the country. And so it's that moral hazard of like the U.S. government and the monetary policy and the fiscal policy can always change the rules and bend the rules and get themselves out of whatever issues, you know, we get ourselves into. But with Bitcoin, not only is it the sovereign currency that an individual can use regardless of their political take or criminal background or whatever, but it's also this thing that it has a set amount of rules that can't really be changed. And Bitcoin specifically, now there's, you know, you can make an argument that proof of stake can be changed fairly with a fair bit of agility, especially given, you know, like some of the newer networks that have maybe a smaller set of validators or whatever. But Bitcoin specifically and proof of work and how many people are able to mine it and sort of dictate the rules, it's very rigid. It's very hard to change the rules around, you know, total supply or around, you know, whatever might come about one day in the future. And so whenever Bitcoin has all this over-leveraged, you know, bubble, and it comes in and it pops and it drops 50% in a couple of weeks, people should look at that as a feature, not a bug, because, you know, it hurts and it's painful and it sucks for sure. But at the end of the day, it's sustainable because you do almost have this, like, not to get biblical, but you do have this 40 days and 40 nights of rain to come and wash away the sins of the earth. And, you know, Bitcoin can be Noah and shepherd all of us, of all of us Bitcoiners, and, you know, pair by pair, up into the ark and, you know, sail it out, and then come back and, you know, refresh the cycle. So yeah, not your keys, not your crypto. That's the moral of the story I'm telling. Sorry, Joseph, I'm on a wild tangent, but that's what's fun about happy hour, I guess.
Dude, no, that is insane. I actually never thought of cryptocurrencies or just Bitcoin in that fashion. That the my favorite phrase that you said was that you shouldn't consider the 40% drawbacks or those like sharp, volatile just pukes that the market has, like that we are experiencing and have just experienced. That's a feature. And it washes out the filth. It improves the system. Not opposed to our current monetary system, where when we had the whole Lehman Brothers and the whole housing bubble crisis situation, it crashed. And all of Americans, all of like the average people who had 401ks and index funds, they were the ones that suffered. And then taxpayers ultimately had to pay the price for that and pay for the bailout. That's how that system works. That's how that monetary system decides who deserves to pay the system and who gets to basically like a almost like a non-consequential like relationship with these entities with big money, because they could be these bad actors who were over leveraged on the bonds in the housing market and they received nothing. They got no like a slap on the wrist and then they ended up getting bailed out. One guy went to jail and that was it. And that kind of like ability to sweep those things under the rug and to put them into society and make them normalized, it's actually kind of insane to think about. Quintus, thank you so much for coming up to the stage. Do you want to contribute to anything of this? I know you're an options trader.
Yeah, I actually wanted to comment on Pantera's thing. I mean, while I fully agree with Bitcoin, I mean, I'm all on board with Bitcoin as the future. The thing that we kind of forget about is that not everybody was an early Bitcoin adopter. And I don't just have 1,000 or 10,000 Bitcoin sitting in DeFi in a cold storage area. And for, you know, Joe Blow and the average investor, or just, you know, a young professional who's in their eyeballs in debt, who just is starting out in the world and does believe in Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency, but just Bitcoin specifically, there's nothing you can do. Like, what are you going to do? Put in $100 a month and then transfer that to DeFi? That's just not realistic for a lot of people. So I think that maybe that answers part of the question for Pantera and the issue and the draw for centralized finance, specifically Voyager, Celsius, Coinbase. I mean, I use a little bit of everything. I just can't get around that. Not everybody has the capital and, not everybody is at a position where they can dump a lot of that in there, and they don't have they need that money, they need it liquid. I don't know, I just feel like there's a big divide between those who are early adopters and the current situation, where there's a lot of people who believe in it but they're just stuck in centralized finance. They're just stuck and they just don't have the capital to make that big investment. It's not the time. And I mean, myself, I would love to dump a ton of money just straight into Bitcoin. And I did just last week, you know, more than I have ever done it before. But I still am, you know, doubtful that it's the time to do it, no matter how much I believe in it. But, you know, I don't know if that. Yeah, I have a hard time justifying just writing that off as people, you know, not believing in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your comments for sure. And don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like, I'm sometimes I sound like a Bitcoin maxi, but I'm not. So I'm not saying like, hey, you know, spot buy Bitcoin and like, that's the only way that you're going to make money. And it's the only righteous path in Web3 or in crypto. I think that it's important to distinguish between. And so let me just rewind a little bit. A lot of what I just was preaching about with Bitcoin is also holds true for a bunch of different cryptocurrencies, and Ethereum being, you know, basically the second kind of household name that I think falls under a lot of the positive things that I'm saying about Bitcoin. So I'm in no way saying like, hey, the only way forward here for us all to kind of like have freedom of our own currency and our own value is like spot buy Bitcoin and put it in cold storage. That's not what I'm saying. But I do think in the same vein, it's very important to distinguish like the difference between a platform like Aave or Compound versus a BlockFi or a Voyager. And I think sometimes, like, just based on pure marketing and user experience, which I get, it's very easy for people to be like, oh yes, like I'm using crypto, I'm into crypto, and like, and, but I hold all my assets on like Coinbase, or I hold all my assets in BlockFi. And they don't, they never really get kind of that like old school education on like why. Like, why are we here? It's not just about the price action. It's not just about, you know, like ease use. Sometimes like the user experience, sometimes the shittier the user experience, the better the opportunity in this space. I think that still holds true. Because a lot of times
it definitely does.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times you're paying for the user experience. And people don't realize that. And for so many people who, you know, this is your first cycle, or you're just getting into it or whatever, you're so used to like the Facebooks and the Twitters and like all the apps we use on our phone. And so you try and look for like an analog to that. And you're like, well, why would I use like Aave? This is like impossible to figure out. Or like, look at the user interface on Curve. Like, what the hell is that? You know what I mean? It looks like Windows 95. And it takes a while to like kind of embrace that and accept that we're watching the birth of a brand new thing. This isn't centralized social media, which in my opinion, like, grew into great user experience at a very rapid rate. I don't want people to get me wrong, because I think I do end up sounding like a Bitcoin maxi a lot. I'm definitely very pro Bitcoin, but I think there's a lot of great alternatives and altcoins and platforms that can be used. I just think it's important to like kind of just like respect the orange coin, respect your elders. And once you wrap your head around like why was Bitcoin so revolutionary, then you can kind of go off and like, okay, figure out like, okay, this is a sovereign platform. This is a real decentralized platform. And I'm not at risk of, you know, whatever insolvency. And then they freeze deposits and withdrawals. And now Goldman Sachs owns my crypto portfolio.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that you explain it in that pathway too. Cause I've only been, Joseph knows, into crypto for like a year and a half now. And I just didn't see, all I saw was centralized finance to start. And I'm like, what's the point? I'm already into the regular stock market. What's the point? I do options trading. This is enough. Like, I don't see the point. But that was because I was only looking at centralized exchanges where people did their trading. And that's when I started to discover what Bitcoin was and learning it. So I guess that maybe that's the same pathway you mentioned. But just because of safety issues, I'm all over the place. I don't trust any one entity. I've got stuff everywhere. But
well, I mean, right now, I think it's like one of the things that's like pushing me off the edge of like also being scared of DeFi is like all the safety concerns we've been having. And it's been happening throughout like the past month or two. It seems like everything is on fire. I don't know if it's just the fact that like Wells Fargo is trying to buy us all out or just make us all poor again. I don't know if that's what's causing it, but it just seems like so many protocols are having major compromises. This week, we saw the Harmony exploit, and the Harmony exploit's really bad. That's like 100 million that was just exploited off of their bridging infrastructure. And we all know bridging infrastructure sucks. And like Harmony doesn't have they don't have a jump crypto to bail them out like Wormhole did. And so seeing all of these like compromises, even Convex Finance just had a compromise where if you signed a transaction, that your wallet was compromised because you approved a malicious contract. And the problem was from the DNS server. The DNS server literally routed the transaction to the wrong server, and the server that had that, like, that got the transaction ran its smart contract with a malicious like intent. So anyone who had like approvals from Convex had to like scramble and like revoke the access from that contract. So like literally,
wow. That's a pure hack. That's the hack in the purest sense I've ever heard. That's amazing.
Yeah,
that's
like it's insane. It's insane. The Harmony hack, we haven't even heard many details. The Harmony hack hasn't come out, but it was straight up just a bridging exploit. 100 million, like 100, like I think 100 million worth of assets just gone. And so like people are just, there's just so many major hacks that have occurred that it's like, it's just really hard for me to endorse DeFi to an average person who doesn't know how to protect their stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like we're being desensitized to it, but at the same time I just listened to the Bitcoin Standard again last week, or I finished it last week, and the one thing that stood out that I forgot was like, this is a computer system. Is it really a hack, or is it just the way it's designed? I mean, are people exploiting, or are they just using the system? You know, you're not really stealing money, you're just using the code that's there. So I've been treating DeFi that way, and it's kind of made it a little safer now. But again, you know, I got burned in Luna too. I'm still a lunatic, and I'm crying every day. But at the same time, it's just the way the system is. Like Joseph just said, until there's a safety mechanism, then nobody, most people, average Joe, is not going to jump into DeFi and actually get into the nitty gritty of the stuff that we enjoy and we love about the whole DeFi ecosystem. But that's probably part of the draw for these centralized exchanges. Like, there is safety there. Like, I'm not concerned. I have stuff at Voyager, and I'm really, even now, I'm not concerned about it because I know there's big money backing it. And as much as I want to be in that world completely, I'm not. Like, I'm in the other worlds as well. I'm still in centralized finance. You know, I have a home mortgage. I do stock investing. You know, I'm still in the other world. So it does provide you with some safety, and I just have to live with the fact that it's not all mine.
Yeah. I think that's a good balanced approach to take, actually. And I don't mean to seem like I'm backpedaling, but that's definitely fair. And like, even Coinbase, and I don't know about some of the other platforms, but like, I know Coinbase offers FDIC insurance on deposits. So, to an extent, you're covered. I think FDIC is like $250,000, in deposits. So, yeah, I mean, and like, don't get me wrong, like, I leave money on centralized exchanges too. I don't leave large amounts on there, but I do give up a certain amount of trust for some of the services they offer and the convenience they offer, but also like the security. I know if I have money sitting on KuCoin and I lose my phone or whatever, like, I'm pretty confident that I'll figure out a way to get those funds back. Whereas with the money that I hold in cold storage, or the value rather that I hold in cold storage, I think that's a better word. It's a huge pain in the ass to like make sure that I can get access to that at all times. Or if I, God forbid, am struck by lightning, my family can access that. So there's certainly a trade-off there. And I certainly appreciate that, because I think sometimes maybe I do preach a little bit too much about like, sovereign currency, and like, this is crazy. We shouldn't let like these crooks and from the central banks like have any of our money. But I can definitely see where you're coming from, for sure.
Yeah, it's funny you just mentioned the crypto keys. So one of my sisters is also into DeFi, and I got her into Luna. We both actually got in at the same time. And the funny thing is, so she redid her will recently, and it says in her will, any digital assets, please see, I don't know how it's worded, but it basically says, see my brother. That's all it says, because nobody has any idea how to get to those assets but me. She has nobody, and I have nobody else that we ever talked to about it, family-wise. Just an entertaining note.
Right. So hopefully you guys don't die on the same plane crash. Make sure you take separate planes on vacation.
That's in there too. Yeah, we can never travel together again.
Right. And not to shill one of my own projects, but this is something that Pete and I from Bytes Digital Group have been working on with Obi. So I guess I will now take this time to show my own project. But basically with some of the new technology that's come out, even on Bitcoin, with something called Taproot, you can delegate permissions to wallets or accounts, rather. I won't use the word wallet. You can delegate permissions to a secondary account that can then access your funds, but you can set a limit. And it could be a time limit. It could be a spending limit over a certain period of time. It could be a whitelisted contract that it can only interact with that contract, and it's blacklisted with other contracts. And just with like, you know, those three or four parameters, it gives you a ton of flexibility to basically hold your whole stack in cold storage, but then create these sub accounts that can then come in and like, hey, I want to have a hot wallet on my phone, but I don't want to have to worry about, you know, getting spoof attacked or SIM swapped or, you know, wrench attacked or whatever, and losing whatever I have in cold storage. So we can actually, through OBI, set a limit and be like, hey, if you want a $1,000 a month limit, that's all you can lose. And even though it's spending from your cold storage account, that sub account only has that specific limitation that you set on it. So, yeah, that's the pitch for OBI, basically.
I appreciate you having me up here again. That last week's Spaces, Ethereum, after you left, when OLA came up, still blew my mind. I think I listened to it two or three times. The Goldman Sachs fund kind of makes sense in the whole scheme of USDC and BlackRock and that whole thing we talked about last week. One thing I did find amusing, you said without hesitation, McAfee's not dead.
Me or Pantera? Because I've recently found out this conspiracy theory. I didn't know. I knew John McAfee had died, but I didn't know it was like from such shady circumstances. Yeah.
Oh, no. I know. I mean, if you want to believe in everything, he created the virus that he then created McAfee antivirus for, if you want to go all the way back. But no, I think Pantera had mentioned something about maybe still being alive.
Yeah. John McAfee. Rest in peace, but he's not dead.
All right, I'm gonna have to do my own research on that one. But I think the disconnect, Gwent, was that, you know, it doesn't matter if it's $1 or $10,000 that's in cold storage. I think it's just the idea that you hold that key. You could be in the Philippines making $1 an hour, or you could be in America making $50 an hour. It shouldn't matter. Whether it's DeFi, centralized, you should just be holding at least, call it an even number, 50% of your portfolio on a, not on CeFi. It's how I took it.
I think that there's also like a circumstance thing here, kind of like what you just mentioned. Like for some users that are in just living abroad from away from the American financial institution, away from the US dollar, this narrative and this tech is going to be so, so powerful for them. Because I mean, ultimate trajectory, I do think that this could just be completely insane speculation. But at some point in time, the decentralized plugin tools, kind of like what OBI is going to do, where you can actually manage your assets, and it accomplishes that like line of thinking, is that no matter who you are in the world, no matter where you live, internet access should become universal at some point in time in history. So at that point in time, once you have internet, you should be able to be holistically responsible for your assets and like participate in like almost a shared financial system. And so that kind of value add will be unlocked as soon as that there is an alternative, reliable system, a more smooth system, a more trusted system, a way better version of what we're already seeing right now. It just makes you realize how much of how early blockchain really is. Because like right now, I mean, these past couple of years, we've all been like living in this dreamland of DeFi being this incredible thing. We've been seeing insane valuations. And I know it hurts all of us lunatics to think about when we were riding high, when we were hitting like 120. But I mean, obviously, it was a flawed model, and that flawed model ended up making a lot of new millionaires out there. And it's crazy to see that this early into the tech, we were capable of doing that. And it's because of how profound the value add is that the value add is truly there. And there are people that are substantially ready for it, and they're going to be scared away because of this whole downturn. But I mean, it's going to be subversively put into their lives regardless. I mean, just this Goldman Sachs acquisition just shows you that they know that the ultimate trajectory is for people to onboard cryptocurrencies, because like the broader world, people who need access to a separate monetary system, to a separate store of value, they're going to eventually find ways to onboard into the system and eventually overpower the current one, and just basically make it, basically just replace it.
I'd love to ask your guys' thoughts on the Solin situation and if you, and second part would be if you agree or disagree, if that could have benefited Terra in a sense to stop it from fully collapsing.
Could you repeat the first part?
Yeah, Solon, who was able to, through a pretty quick 24-hour governance vote, take over the largest wallet on Solana's Solon platform that had, I think, approximately 90% of the liquidity loaned out and borrowed again, and they were borrowing USDC from it. So to stop the stop what we saw happen on Anchor and bad debt, they overtook the wallet. Now the validators or the governance and the devs hold on to the keys of that wallet, and I guess they're paying it down. I'm not sure really what they're doing. I was trying to figure out what was going on more with that.
To be honest, I had heard about that wallet.
Yeah,
that's
Go ahead. Oh, sorry.
I just had a generic opinion on it, but I guess you're kind of having the argument of centralized versus decentralized, and I mean, a decentralized system like Terra isn't going to make it, right? Anchor didn't make it because there was no centralized action, but Solend might survive because there's centralized action. So we're kind of stuck in that middle ground where there's a safety mechanism that can be implemented, and the decentralized system doesn't have that. And it pains everybody who loves DeFi, but it's just kind of the state of affairs right now. Like, what else are you going to do? Yeah, it sucks. I hate it as a DeFi person, but I mean, what else are you going to do? I don't know. As far as the person who has that wallet, though, I'd be extremely angry. I mean, maybe they could have contacted that person somehow. I mean, obviously this is DeFi, but I'd be angry. It's your money. It's your crypto.
Understanding, they tried to contact them on the blockchain through the different outlets they could, but there's no response. So, there's so many, and that's why I'm asking people that might be a little bit more knowledgeable on this topic than I am. Was it a kamikaze wallet that was meant to take down the whole lending platform? I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what else was going on with that whole behind the scenes thing.
Yeah, I'm looking into it right now. It's definitely an interesting question to ask. That's a massive amount of liquidity that was essentially could have been nefariously used. But even then, it's like you get into more of a philosophical question of this is all free market. Does a free market really have a definition for malicious activity if it's within the bounds of the free market? So I guess maybe this decision for the Solana to take over the wallet or try to take it over, maybe that is a kind of like a minus for them for the fact that they wanted to act on that. But then again, what if that wallet did want to take down the system? Do you just let the system die? As a sour lunatic, I would be like, yeah, you just let the system die. If it's exploitable like that, then you just let the system die. And then a bigger and better one will get rebuilt from that. And that is not investment advice on Terra V2. Everyone, please go do your research on that.
Yeah, I'll chime in here and then I got to run. But I will say that the argument between some centralized entity taking action to fix whatever the issue is versus, code is law, not to go down the rails of another crypto history lesson. But I think it was Laura Shin just came out with a book talking about the DAO hack. And like the first time anyone ever heard that term code is law was when Ethereum Classic, which was then Ethereum, was they had built this DAO structure on top of it, and somebody found an exploit and basically stole everybody's money. And so they were like, okay, well, this failed, so do we roll back the chain or do we just let it go? And that's kind of how the split happened there. There's been many such instances of this, and I will just say I do think while having some centralized protection or security is expedient and convenient and feels good right now, we're already seeing the acronym CBDC, which for those of you that aren't familiar, central bank digital currency, we're already seeing that being thrown around, not just by speculators and by bankers, but by literally people on Capitol Hill and legislators and regulators who are already planning how they're going to enter the space. And I would just say, you know, a centralized entity like Solend, who's going to come up with a governance proposal and fix whatever this bad debt that this actor had, whether that was malicious or not, is a drop in the bucket compared to basically, and I'm going to try not to go down a Ryan Olah path here, but it's a drop in the bucket compared to basically the World Bank and the regime, the global regime, like issuing currency that they can basically decide whether what you're spending your money on is good or can happen or can't happen. And so, you know, just consider that. Just consider that. Again, I'm not saying like the way things are right now, I agree with you to an extent that you should be balancing your portfolio, but just consider where that goes to its end, because, you know, the more power we give to our overlords, especially in the digital age where everything you do is tracked and traced and blah, 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 you know, they don't yield back any of that control that they ever get. So them controlling the money, that would be quite a sight to see. And then deciding what you can spend your money on or can't spend your money on is, you know, I think that's recipe for disaster. So maybe when I speak, I'm coming from more that perspective than trying to like pinpoint like, oh, Voyager, they're idiots because they, you know, or Celsius rather, they're idiots because they froze deposits. I think there's a great conversation to be had between the way that TFL handled the collapse of Luna versus how Celsius handled their collapse, or whatever you want to call it at this point, versus even how Solend is dealing with it with quick governance. So yeah, those are my parting words, and don't mean to be such a doomer and a boomer, but everyone have a great weekend, and I'll be live 4:30 on YouTube next week. So cheers.
Thank you for joining us, sir. Have a good evening and have a good weekend. All right. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't know where you guys want to take this conversation anywhere further. I mean, the Solana question actually is really intriguing, considering that this week they had the Sol phone. I know everyone's been like watching the news on the Solana phone. I just wanted to see if you guys have any opinions on that, because I think that also walks a new line of companies that I'm actually interested in is like, so this tech is going to essentially allow for these companies to have control of a chain that they can take control of a wallet, of a given wallet, if it's going to act maliciously or they perceive it to act maliciously. Well, now, what if we gave that same company with the same control over the chain an ability to give people phones? Is this a new iteration of big tech? Are we witnessing the new creation of big tech? Are we supposed to rely on these blockchains to not abuse these powers, especially considering like at some point, maybe they do grow to end up becoming like an Apple of industry because blockchain has consumed society so much? It's kind of interesting. Or what if an Apple decided to release their own iOS chain? It's just an interesting conversation. Do you guys have any opinions?
On the first aspect, I'm going to go back to the bailouts. It kind of just defeats the whole ethos of what Bitcoin came about after the Lehman Brothers collapse. I don't like seeing all these bailouts, especially coming from the commercial real estate industry. I'd rather, you know, I understand buying bad debt and that there's assets to be bought, but I don't think everything needs a bailout. I think that's why we got Bitcoin in the first place. And then on top of that, a saying that I'll tell people is a blockchain was created to take power away from tyranny, but in the hands of the right tyrant, it can be used to kind of cohort the people at will as well. So, you know, right now, I think the most decentralized thing we can still do is pay in cash.
Just paying in hard US cash.
And paying in hard US cash, in the most part, it's untraceable outside of a receipt and some cameras that might be in the, you know, in the window. But yeah, you know, that's the whole thing. Once that cell phone comes out and all my text messages might end up on the blockchain, all my phone calls could end up somehow on the blockchain. Where is true privacy? And then that's where I'm digging into secret network and data privacy and chains like that, because there's inherent evil that comes on an open ledger. There's also inherent good that comes from it as well.
Interesting. Inherent good for the average user, is that what you're getting at?
Yes, in the way that money moves and the way that people can study good and bad behavior of companies, and the way we've got these chain analytics groups that do an amazing job in identifying real true Ponzi's in the real true sense, and just the flow of money of bad actors. Look, they can trace in less than an hour now thousands of wallet movements from these hackers and pinpoint IP addresses. So there's inherent good, but at the same time, they could also corral us as just normal investors and people wanting to use our dollars. What happens if I'm not going to lie, but I like to smoke weed. What happens if I want to go and buy weed and now they know who I transferred my USDC to? You know what I mean? It's not legal in the state I'm in. So there's a whole inherent Big Brother issue on an open ledger style platform, if you will.
Yeah, my first thoughts on the phone were kind of similar to yours, Roy, that's a lot of information that's going to be tracked. But then I thought about it. And is there anything on my cell phone that's not already tracked? I mean, where's it already going?
Well, that's
just not on a blockchain.
And the trader in me is, always going to say, and I'll, eat these words, is don't fight the Fed, trade with them, right? So, there's a part of that you should be putting money in your pocket at the same time. And, that's what a lot of us didn't do with Luna, was we didn't put the money in our pockets. We put it and kept it risked on in UST or, reinvested it in other risk assets. So, I don't know if I have a perfect answer for that one.
No, I don't think there is a perfect answer either. I think it's just, we don't know. We don't know where we're going with this. We don't know where we currently are even. Where do we stand currently on this privacy issue between the blockchain and what we already have? But I just, I've gone from within the last 10 years, maybe ever since I got a cell phone, I just assume that everything I'm doing is being tracked. And it probably is. And I've been
right,
able
they,
to
they don't
you know,
inher-
sleep
don't
a little better, but
you have to understand, I don't inherently care about Quint or Royal or Bytes, right? Like, unless you're the bad actor behind 15 screens and using Tor to log into the spaces, I don't think you're even a blip on the radar, right? So there's also that aspect to it too. But the true Bitcoin people and DeFi people will argue that kind of sense as well, that if we don't fight back, then what are we doing here? Are we just rebuilding TradeFi on the blockchain, like Pantera said?
Yep. I fully agree with that. And the other thing about this whole phone situation is that it is Solana. And Solana, is pretty damn centralized. There's a lot of big investors, VCs into it. So I don't think Solana is the best.
Well, that's where the best... The argument will come, though, is if you're trying to make money, get in and get out, as always, NFA, non-financial advice, all that jazz. But again, don't bet against big money. I want to see everyone here be able to buy, a nice steak dinner instead of having to go to McDonald's, right? I want to see everyone be able to better their lives from being on these spaces and taking the time to learn and grow and not just stare at digital money on the screen either. So, You gotta place your bets and hedge them. Don't go all in on one thing, obviously, as we all are realizing now. It's very easy to get coerced into these communities and cult-like atmospheres of echo chambers. And those people that kind of challenge themselves to learn more. I've been tuning into a lot more Bitcoin, truly only Bitcoin spaces, and just shutting up and listening. And hearing what they have to say, because even though I've been in this space for 6 years now, I was, Ethereum brought me in and I was a smart contract guy and I led that. I watched companies rise and I watched them fall. And, times like this, it's fun to go back and I'll preach history. I don't need to go down the TradeFi route, but more recently the ICO crisis in 2018, I think we should let companies fail. Again, it's not inherently me being mean, but like you said, this is code. This isn't, one or two bad people's decision making, which I think some of the centralized organizations did. I mean, how does Voyager approve $655 million uncollateralized loan to a foreign entity? That's just poor risk management. And then there's also just poor code. So I think in a true capitalist style economy, and I think that's kind of what we're building, is you've got to let the weak fizzle out and you've got to let the strong keep pushing forward. And right now the strong is backed by traditional finance money. So I'm not going to fade Solana so hard. I'm going to root against them. At the same time, I'm not going to fade them, because at the end of the day, I'll jump on and make some money real quick here and there. But yeah, my belief is becoming more and more that Bitcoin is the standard that we all think it is. And there are better things out there. But when it comes down to storing value, again, it doesn't matter if you have one Satoshi or whatever they call them, sats, or if you have, 15 Bitcoin. Keeping that self-custody, I think, is very important, and an education tool that, people that have been in the industry now for even a year or two or 5 years or 10 years should always keep preaching. Like everyone says, it's cliche, not your keys, not your tokens. But again, I have to repeat what Pantera said, and take this time to learn how to self-custody, even if it's through a MetaMask or a centralized wallet, but you still get your keys. So that's what I would preach, honestly, in this time period, because these times are for learning.
It's just interesting to see how the blockchains are taking their priorities right now. Because considering, you have this whole ongoing debate about the scaling solution, and it's intriguing to watch how different chains are building differently. This past week, we heard that DYDX, a major perpetuals trading platform from the Ethereum chain, they had their own infrastructure to do perpetual trades, and they had a lot of TVL. And they have decided to announce, to basically change directions. And with their V2 model, I believe it's V4 actually, with the V4 model, they will be rolling out and starting their own chain on Osmosis. And then meanwhile, you're witnessing Solana release a phone. It's super interesting to see how the dichotomies of opinions are starting to form. And I think it's more of a question of what kind of blockchains are being built. Because it's like there's a philosophy with the modern day, like the modern day US dollar monetary system. There's a philosophy tied to it. There's a belief system to it, and that it functions off of. That same kind of belief system that we all have learned and become educated with Bitcoin exists for all these blockchains as well. They have different ethos. They have different beliefs. And the Cosmos one is the Cosmos one is the one I'm most familiar with. I'm still learning about the history of DeFi, or the history of ETH, which is basically the history of DeFi. I'm learning that the Cosmos value add is essentially that all these chains will be able to build build their own infrastructure and interact and interoperate with each other. And there wouldn't be this kind of silo of value hoarding. It's more of a anti-maximalist opinion. It's no more maximalizing a certain L1. It's more of this interoperability, literally just interaction with all these different blockchains and being able to build something together. And so that kind of philosophy is different from each and every single one. And the Solana move to get a phone, that to me, it comes off and exudes Web2 almost Apple kind of feel to it. It's like we want to give you this seamless experience to this new world. And that's what Apple tried doing with or what they did with the iOS phone. They introduced this whole new world and they created the App Store, and people really enjoyed this, and it created a new generation of companies to come and exist. And Solana is kind of doing this, but with the blockchain and introducing the phone, they're hoping to kind of bridge that kind of layer of application of the tech. So I actually find it really interesting to see how these blockchains are creating new ideologies for companies into the next generation.
Well, that's where I guess I have a question with the Solana phone is, I mean, Samsung 3 years ago announced a Samsung crypto phone. I think two, actually. One that would verify the Bitcoin blockchain, could almost act as a node. And then another one was a wallet-centric phone that you could store your crypto. It was for people that couldn't get to banks or ATMs. Both those fizzled out after 2018 ICO crash and last bear market. So just, yes, we all look at Apple as, you know, the crown jewel of not only a rise to fame, but a crash with the failing of the Mac computer and Steve Jobs actually getting kicked off as CEO. But and then the rebuild of the iPhone and the iPod, I just think it's an easy kind of buzzword. I don't see a disruption from Apple when I can download a great UI app like TerraStation or Kepler Wallet or MetaMask and interact on the same phones that I'm using already today. So I'm interested. I'm going to have to poke around more this weekend as well. I don't see the value add in the, you know, are they a Solana wallet phone that's running on, you know, that's using Google as their OS? I'm not sure.
So I can give you a little bit of details on that, on the specifics for that. I have an article pulled up. So the Solana app is going to essentially rely on a partnership with several other companies to provide like different services. So it's going to build on the Android SDK. It makes sense because Apple doesn't want to like open source their iOS. So Android's going to be the operating system on there. The Magic of Eden, it's the top marketplace on Solana, will be built into the phone itself. Like you'll be able to have a UX, a UI that you can interact with the top NFT marketplace on the Solana chain. They're also going to be partnering with Phantom, the biggest wallet provider, to hopefully probably, I can't imagine what they're going to do to the Android software. It has to be really good and seamless for people to really find this as a viable option. I guess crypto power users will be the ones to use this app the most, especially the NFT traders. But if you're going to try to get people to use this phone to pay for things and you want this to be the bridge for paying stuff into the world, then it's going to have to be a killer wallet experience there. Orca, a decentralized finance platform, will also be building, will be seamlessly built into the Solana Android software. And the Solana Foundation pledged $10 million towards spurring the development of mobile apps, which is honestly not that much when you consider how much money the Solana Labs really has. But yeah, that's a little bit more information on what they're doing with the phone. To be honest, it looks like a good quality phone. But then you also have the other questions: is can they truly be able to create a phone to compete with contemporary phones? Or is this just going to be for the power NFT trader?
Yeah, that's what it seems like. It's just a Rolex for the NFT trader. It's going to be a more luxury device than it is going to be an unbanked device, if you will. That's how I see it. Now, do they push through? Do they get funding? Do they grow? Possibly. They're well funded, right? So it'll be interesting to see what they come out with and how it's developed. And then, you know, trying to break into Apple's market share, especially in the States and in Europe, is almost next to impossible at this point. I think one of the running jokes in our group chat is someone comes in with a green text message, they're already kicked out.
Yeah, it's the tribalism of Web 2, or the tribalism of Web 2. A lot of people think that like the crypto tribalism stuff is just unique to this industry, but no, that's kind of existed in Web 2 for a while. And the Apple fanaticism is a great example of that.
And then back to what you were talking about with the Cosmos ecosystem, what gets me excited is, yeah, you can spin up a Cosmos chain in what, a couple weeks with the right dev and right knowledge. And we're seeing DXDY, which I see was part of your post when starting the spaces. You got I always pronounce them wrong. Kuji, sorry if I pronounce them wrong. Coming out with their own chain, and they have something like 600 validators already. That's the stuff I love. And then Lavana announcing something here next week with what chain they're going with. I'm assuming it's going to be Cosmos based as well. Knowing that Jonathan is a heavy investor in DXDY, so and that's who I would probably put my money with. What chain that Lavana is going to? If you were any fan of the Dragons, they're getting ready to launch their Rec Dragon NFT on Ethereum. I'd go over and check Lavana's page for that. And in no way am I associated with them, but just a project I really love and a person that I really found to respect. that's been there since the days of Vitalik starting Ethereum. So, but yeah, Cosmos definitely gives me the most warm fuzzies, if you will, for sure. Between secret network that's running data privacy to solid teams that are spinning up their own chains and kind of redictating the bill of rights, if you will, for their chain and how they want to see it operate in the future.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like all these chains are going to be able to build their own vision for a bill of rights, essentially. And that's what DYDX, I think, that's the biggest narrative that I've seen this week painted. That's personally, it's bullish, but I mean, like, don't, like, no financial advice, like everyone. Like, this is bullish, but it's bullish long term. Like, Cosmos is a long term ecosystem. It has major backing. It has a lot of money, but it's not a short term investment option. Really, it's going to be in constant development for the foreseeable future. But DYDX kind of going over there and building their own blockchain just signals to you how much more this conversation is going to matter over the next couple of months. Is just to see how these chains build out, the ways that they build out, and also the improvements of the scaling solutions and the scaling technology. Because like right now, all these funds who have had money in the space, like after now that everything is down, all these funds are going to be start putting their money into the bets of the next cycle. When inflation starts going down, when the Fed stops being so hawkish, when everything starts really getting a little bit primed for a run, Bitcoin will go running. I don't want you guys to take this to the bank, but it genuinely does that. Anytime there is a short sight of it being a risk on environment, Bitcoin leads the market and it leads the crypto market market cap. So it's going to be interesting to see how these different chains really build out over the next year, next months, next several months, just to see how they kind of add on to that, to the future of the DeFi Web3 space.
And I'd say another fun one to research, if you guys have time, is Kadena. Because they're taking the proof of work model like Bitcoin and doing the same thing as Cosmos and building sub sharding chains. So I think the future of scaling isn't so much are we relying on one chain and layer twos, but it's going to be the interoperability of multiple chains all working together, whether it's through proof of work, proof of stake. So I'm really eyeballing Cosmos and Kadena, obviously following ETH, Bitcoin, you know, a couple other the top 10 projects out there. But those are what get me excited right now, for sure.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Royal Pirate. I think that we are coming to a close. I want to thank everyone for coming out to the show today. Be sure to tune in next week. We're always going to be going live from the Bice Digital account on Fridays. This is the happy hour. This week, we had some really insane news coming out. Just 50 minutes before we went live, we heard about the Goldman Sachs rumors, CoinDesk. This is coming from CoinDesk, so I hope their source is reliable. But they have reported that Goldman Sachs is seeking to raise $2 billion in funds to acquire Celsius's assets, which is major for the industry. We also had an opportunity to chat about Solana and then also briefly mention about the situation with privacy and how Bitcoin should actually be the driving narrative and the current state of DeFi. And everyone out here knows what the current climate is. And if you're out here listening and tuning into our content, we appreciate you. We're going to stay here throughout the bear market. We're going to keep building. We're going to keep reporting on what people are actually developing in this space. We appreciate every single one of you. And we'll see you guys in next week's Twitter space. Take care.
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was the Bites Digital Group weekend crypto news about the Solana phone, Sol, Bitcoins, Ethereums, recorded on Friday, June 24th, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.
Itchy and grimy, staying alive when the virus took over and showed us how to die. First it started out with a little coffin fit. Next thing you know, getting fitted for a coffin shit. Break up the Sunday best, breaking runaway sweats. Like a funhouse mirror, making fun of these pets. Are we done yet? Just 5 more minutes. Make the decision to pull the plug and let's get dinner. Winter spinning dizzy round a thinning circle. Hair trigger slipping, so much for keeping it surgical. Disintegrate that micro, finger on the lice. Kicking doors in but never find the right stall. The bark is worse than the bite, y'all dishonest. Liars lying about how big their lion is. Cage rattled, I gotta keep the flow hypnotic. So I stole this tiger's shirt from Joe Exotic. The tiger should be here tomorrow. Meow.
gift baskins from a secret admirer, acting like you ain't the one to get fed to the tiger. One false move, one little slip up, get your guts ripped up. Drunk off the stigma, funky with my pimp cup. The dude abides, missing a couple teeth, but that's by design. Friendly reminders to make better decisions, keeping that distance, preventing collisions. The business end of this beast is all teeth, all weak. We'll call you, so don't ever call me. Wrapped up in the lines, feeling kinda sorry. Switching it up from alarm to alarming. Whether or not it's balmy, laying by the palm trees. My favorite time, kicking it with the fall breeze. Living like the king of this redneck ghetto. Waiting for the day I get my Netflix special.
Ladies and gentlemen, before you hear it on the news, I'm going to tell you myself. About an hour ago, we had an incident where one of the employees stuck their arm through the cage and a tiger tore her arm off. I can give you your money back, or I can give you a rain check. Why don't you come back at another date?
What do you want me and Paul to do right now?
Do chores.
Chores.
Be safe.
Okay, back to
it. Do not stick your hands in any cages.
All right.
Channel Spaces.